We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
I appreciate you hanging out with me until 2 o'clock. I'm Lawrence Holmes, the crew, Herb Lawrence and Rick Damkamp. We're here with you, and please get out in the sunshine today or sit in a sun-baked room. Sit on your deck. Go grill. Go be outside. Take me outside. Walk around with me. I'm good with that. If you want to do that, this segment is being brought to you by Indeed. Indeed is used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. Learn more at Indeed.com/hire. Earlier this week, as a show, we got together and we said, you know, we have some really cool interviews that some people have maybe never heard before on my podcast, House of L, where I talk with media people and do like long form interviews with folks. And so I said, you know, since there's not a lot of sports around, I am going to try to bring some of that to the airwaves because it's good conversation and people will listen to good conversation. Episode 14. So when we're already up to episode 100, it'll be next week. But episode 14 was with my friend Barry Rosner. And I love Barry. And I threw on Twitter the gif of Blazing Saddles that I think really like encapsulates my relationship with Barry. Like he's just so Rosner-y. Like it makes you feel good when he's around. And we were texting last night because I said, listen, I'm thinking about playing this section of our interview and I wanted your permission before I went and did it. And he's like, yeah, please go ahead. And he gave me the best smile that I had in a long time, considering where we are right now. And he just said, it was simple. It's one sentence. He says, we will laugh again together one day. And it warmed my heart. Like thinking about that, like thinking about how you're not able to be around a lot of people that you care about, that you interact with on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. Like, those words meant a lot to me, and so does Barry. He's one of my favorites, and I miss him terribly on The Score, but he's still a friend, so I get a chance to hang out with him and talk with him, and he's always available via text, and he says that he's happy when he gets texts from me. So that makes me feel good, too. But he's a great storyteller. One of the best in our business. So I loved sitting down and talking with him about a lot of stuff. Now, you know how Barry is. Like, he's covered baseball for forever, and his relationship with baseball goes way back. He's also someone who knows Greg Maddux as well as anyone in the media. So what we did is we talked about Maddux for sure, but check out this crazy story that Barry is going to tell you about how he's kind of in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And it all started with him being a vendor.
I started when I was 15 as a vendor. You got to work your way up. So I started with Pepsi Cola or Coca-Cola, I think it was. And I worked at all the parks, Wrigley, Comiskey, Chicago Stadium, Soldier Field, sold Coca-Cola or peanuts or popcorn or whatever it was that the various stadiums had. You got to start at the bottom, work your way up. The way I got into it was a friend of mine just happened to know somebody who had done it, found out where you went downtown and went to the union office over on Wells or whatever, wherever it was. And if they liked you, it was kind of a coin flip. If they liked you, they said, all right, we'll give you a union card and you show up on opening day next year and we'll see what happens. And so I got my card and I started vending, and it was the greatest summer job you could possibly have.
Why?
Because you're at the ballpark every day. I mean, I was going to be at the ballpark. I was going to try to be at the ballpark every day anyway in the summer. It's what I did. It's what I always did. I love going to baseball games. So it was an opportunity to make money. It was particularly important during college because that was my – put myself through college doing that. And you were at the ballpark, and you're watching the games. I mean, I loved it. Money was okay. It wasn't great. We did, you know, it was all commission. We didn't make tips back then. Today, everybody gets tips, and it offends me because we didn't get any. I mean, when you go to a game now and you buy four beers and, you know, whatever it costs, a beer vendor gets a $10 tip. I didn't get no joke, probably didn't average a dollar a day in tips back then.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it just that people were cheap where it wasn't the norm?
It just wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing. Everywhere you go, you tip everybody now, right? Pretty much.
I got picked up pizza last night, and I actually tipped the guy for the takeout because he gave me extra Parmesan cheese and plates.
And that's a takeout. That's not even delivery in your tipping the guy. I mean, it's just a thing now. It's what you do, and it's nice. But we didn't get any tips. So I'm bitter. Does that surprise you?
No.
That
no.
I'm a little bitter.
It doesn't surprise me one bit that you're bitter. So you're watching the games and you're having fun watching the games.
There's a great picture of me, by the way. You've seen it. The one where you see me pouring a beer and I'm actually watching the game while I'm pouring the beer.
That takes a lot of skill.
Well, not really. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I had a whole lot of skill. I just wanted to watch the game.
What year are we talking about when you start?
My first year was, I think, 77 or 78, and then my last year was 84. My last game, vending, was game two of the NLCS at Wrigley Field against the Padres, and I thought that we'd be back the next week for the World Series. I mean, Cubs had a 2-0 lead. I remember sitting with a friend of mine in the right field bleachers after the game was over, and the place had cleared out. It was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful fall day, maybe the last nice day. So remember, the next week was really terrible. Had there been a World Series, the weather was not good. And we sat out in the right field bleachers, and the sun was starting to go down, and it was just beautiful. And we talked about what it was going to be like. Can you believe this? We're going to see the World Series at Wrigley Field. Can you believe this? They had a 2-0 lead on San Diego. It was impossible. I didn't have any money, but if I did, I'd have bet every penny that they were going to get to the World Series at that point. And really unfortunate set of circumstances in San Diego, including Jim Fry, the manager, deciding that he wasn't going to go with Rick Sutcliffe in Game 4 because he wanted Sutcliffe for Game 1 of the World Series.
You can't win the series that you aren't playing in.
Ain't that the truth? I backed him up. I believed it. I mean, I didn't think there's any way they'd go 5 with the Padres.
So what were you feeling once you had realized that the series was going sideways and it looked like they weren't going to make it back to Chicago for game one? How does it go from that great moment when you're watching the sunset and thinking about it to, oh, that's over with?
Yeah, well, it was, it was the same day, Sunday. That Sunday was the same day Walter Payton broke Jim Brown's rushing record. And I was just out of college, and we used to buy a lot of Bears tickets. It was really actually the beginning of me having Bears season tickets. And so we were at that game. I watched Walter break the record. I worshiped Walter when I was growing up. It was Sunday was about Walter. That's what it was about. Greatest football player I've ever seen. And so that part was great. And then we got home, and it was already maybe the second or third inning, and I think the Cubs were leading. I just didn't think it was possible that they could lose that game. And it was awful. I mean, it was depressing. It was sad. I really didn't give a lot of thought to, oh, my vending career is over. but here's the funny result of that is we always took our uniforms home if there was going to be another game. And what was the uniform? It was white pants and a blue shirt. And you always took it home because you washed it. And then occasionally you washed it. It depends how much you spilled on yourself that day. And that mattered in the fall because yellow jackets were a big thing in September and October. So if you were dealing with something like beer or Coca-Cola, you had to wash the stuff or else the bees were going to be all over you. So I brought it home to wash it, thinking there was going to be another game. Otherwise, I'd have just thrown it in the bin with all the dirties. And because of that, I think I've told you this story some years later, well, many years later, one night at the Hall of Fame in, I think it was 2005. It was late after the Sandberg induction. I was at the Hall of Fame, and late one night having drinks with Jeff Eitelson, who at the time was not the president of the Hall of Fame, but he was communications director. And we just, it was very late. It was probably 2 or 3 in the morning, sitting out on the back patio at the Otisaga Hotel, which is just a beautiful sight as you overlook the lake behind the hotel where all the Hall of Famers stay. And we were talking about our vending days. He had been a vendor in Boston. And I said, you know, I think I got a box of my stuff somewhere. I got a box of my vending stuff. He said, well, what do you got? I said, I think I got the uniform and my coin changer and my belt, you know, my strap that held up the case and a lot of buttons and hats and things like that. He's like, well, you should send that to us. I said, send what to you? He said, send me the whole box of stuff. I said, I okay, why? He said, I don't know. They might want it. They might want it just to, you know, they collect everything here. They want different kinds of things. So I sent him a whole box of stuff. And a year later, I got about half of it back. And they said, we're considering the rest of it for donation. And about a year later, I got a certificate in the mail and said, we've accepted these items for donation. Thank you very much. So I had this nice certificate and I put it somewhere, who knows where, and didn't think about it again until 2010 when I was there. I believe 2010 was the Dawson induction. And now, by now, Eitelson was the president of the Hall of Fame. And there's a party on Saturday night for the Hall of Famers at the Hall of Fame. It's a wonderful event, open bar. And we were walking around. I happened to bump into Eitelson. I said, hey, whatever happened to the stuff that I sent in? He said, you haven't seen it? I said, no. He said, follow me. And I followed him to another part of the Hall of Fame. And there in a display case is my uniform with my coin changer and my strap and some buttons and some other things and a little plaque at the bottom with a nice little inscription and donated by me at the bottom. Very cool. So in a very small way, I am part of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Your name is mentioned in a Hall of Fame display, and it's your stuff that's in there. So when you see this, what's your reaction?
I laughed first, and it didn't really sink in right away. I thought, well, that's very cool. That's very funny. It seems out of place to me, considering the gravity of that night and the situation and the hallowed halls and the people that were around me. And I happened to notice Greg Maddux, who was standing about 40 feet away, looking at his display case. And I said, dog, you got to come see this. And so I walked him over, and he just looked at it in typical Maddux fashion, kind of just laughed and started to walk away. I said, no, we're going to take a picture together here in front of my display case, which, by the way, was here
first
before your
That's right.
display case, which was eventually, what, 2014, I think it was?
Yes.
So I said, I got here before you did. He was not impressed. He was not interested. He kind of gave me one of those nods like, oh, okay, and walked away.
So no picture?
I did get a picture
See?
With Greg Maddux in front of my Hall of Fame display case. I use the words loosely. I mean, it's really not my display case, but my Hall of Fame uniform is there. So because the Cubs lost in San Diego and I never returned, that uniform came home with me accidentally.
How crazy is that?
Put it in a box and forgot all about it.
How did you get to be so tight with Maddox?
Well, I was with him early in his career in Chicago and lived through his difficult times in Chicago and lived through that 92 season as things were getting better. But that's the year we became pretty close because he was getting hammered in Chicago because Stanton Cook and Larry Himes and a guy named Dennis Holmgren, who was the chief negotiator for the Cubs with Scott Boras in those discussions, really hammered Maddox publicly, and they really made it out to be all of his fault, when in reality, they had reneged on a deal in December of 1991, and in 1992 went public by saying to him at the All-Star game, well, you've never won a Cy Young Award, you've never won 20 games, you've never dominated the National League, so who do you really think you are? And their offer to him at the All-Star break, I mean, he's at the All-Star game in San Diego, their offer to him was $500,000 more than it was, what, 9 months prior? Or 7, 8 months prior, whatever it was. So they really hadn't upped their offer at all. They really didn't think that much of him. And he goes out in the second half, dominates the league, wins the Cy Young Award, wins 20 games. And he went through a lot in that second half. One of my fondest memories, fond only because I chuckle when I think about it, was I had been on the phone with Boras many, many times trying to understand everything that happened in December, everything that happened in San Diego, everything that had occurred over the previous year or two in negotiations. And it was complicated and went over it and over it and over it. And I was going to write this big piece between Cincinnati and, I believe, Houston. I think we had an off day. They were going to start a series in Houston on a Friday night. And on the off day, I was going to write this big Maddox story. The story. What really happened and where are they now and what's going to happen? And I there were still some things I was unclear on. So I went to Maddox on a night he was pitching in Cincinnati. And most guys, they won't even look at you on a day they're pitching.
Yeah, you're not even allowed to kind of approach guys on days that they're pitching now.
You know that. You've been in a locker room enough to know that most guys are really uptight. They're really focused, that you don't even get. Danny Jackson wouldn't talk to you, not just the day of, but the day before. You couldn't talk to Danny Jackson. He's a bit of a nutcase. Maddox, being Maddox, I said, look, I need you for 5 minutes. I need to clarify a few things here. So we sat down on the floor by his locker in the back of the locker room in Cincinnati. This is Riverfront still. And near the trainer's room, probably an hour and a half before the game. An hour later, we were still sitting there talking about it. And I think it was Dick Pohl, who was the pitching coach, comes walking up, and he goes, you going to pitch today? Maddox is like, what? He goes, it's like 6:30. Are you going to pitch today? Maddox is like, oh, okay. And he gets up, and he looks down at me, he goes, good thing I know what I'm doing. And laughs, and you can look it up on Baseball Reference that night in Cincinnati in July, and he goes out and throws like a 6-hit shutout, something like that, like it was nothing. You know, it's hot, humid, Cincinnati, the ball travels like crazy. Just, you know, complete game, 6-hit shutout, no big deal.
Just in a regular Maddox.
Yeah.
You know, just go out there and throw a Maddox if you have to.
Yeah. So that year we became particularly close, to answer your question, and I digress as I always do.
Which is why I wanted you on the podcast.
And then that winter, he went through a lot again, and he was pounded in Chicago. And if you go back and look at what was written, it was all slanted against Greg Maddox, unless you find the stuff that I wrote. And that was the early days of the Score. That was the first year of the Score, and he got destroyed on this radio station. And I got destroyed on this radio station, on the Score. Sorry, I'm pointing to this station because we're sitting here in this station. but I know this is your podcast, but he was hammered on the score in Chicago, and he was hammered in the Chicago papers, and I was as well for defending him because the way the story was being told was not fair, and a lot of it was inaccurate. And there was no support for him, not among his current teammates, not among his past teammates, not among, obviously, the Cubs organization, which was spinning it in their in a direction for themselves, of course, never admitting any failure on their part. That was the same winter that they let Andre Dawson walk, and they signed the likes of Jose Guzman and Candy Maldonado and Willie Wilson and Dan Plesac, and they really felt like quantity was going to be better over the quality that they let go. History tells us that did not work out well for them, as Maddux would win another Cy Young in 93 and another in 94 and another in 95, and his four-year ERA over that span versus the league average ERA is as good as anything that's ever been done in the history of baseball, save perhaps Bob Gibson in the late 60s in a different era, in a dead ball decade with a higher mound. So really spectacular what he did, but he was treated really unfairly, but not by me because I understood the story and believed I knew it better than anybody else. But Maddux is the kind of guy, to his credit, and we've never talked about this, but I always felt like he knew that and understood that. And when I would go see him in his Atlanta locker room, he would stop everything he was doing and go sit with me for a while and whatever I needed. If it was a playoff game, whereas he would tell everybody else who came up, I'm talking tomorrow at the press conference, he'd give me anything I needed anytime. When I call him now, he answers the phone. And sometimes he's on the golf course and he says, I got to call you back, but he answers the phone. And he's from a different generation, so he understands where I was in that whole conversation and appreciates it and respects it. And I think to answer your question, maybe more concisely, was that it really, I think, 92 and 93, or that 12 months is where it really changed. But it was always a respectful relationship, but I think he really appreciated that I tried to tell a fair story and tried to portray it more accurately than anybody else did. But I mean, I can remember stories in the Tribune basically saying, what's Greg Maddux really done? What's he really done? You know, what are you really missing? If you look at Jose Guzman's numbers, they're really getting the same guy. And that was the approach that everyone in Chicago was taking. And it was offensive to me because I thought it was all a bunch of crap. And really, like I said, he took a pretty big pounding.
That was my friend Barry Rosner. That's episode 14 of the House of L podcast. So if you search House of L and you scroll through episode 14 is Barry, there's an hour and 20 minutes worth of stories like that with me and Barry just talking about all sorts of stuff. He's on. I actually asked him last night if he would come back, and he was like, absolutely. So we might do a little Skype session. But I think that his text to me is something that we all can use to feel better. It's one sentence, and he said, we will laugh again together one day. Barry's the bleepin' best. Back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Score.
Lawrence Holmes wants to know, what you watching on TV?
When the chips are done.
That's right, Shaka. So we decided that we were going to invite our friends on to talk about, since there's no sports and we're all pretty sports crazy, some of the things that they're watching on television. Joining me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Our buddy Mike Hall, who is great and is completely bored and has two small children running around his house. He was nice enough to join us on the show today, and I don't know if he's going to have quiet to do it, but he's still a good man and thorough. Hello, sir.
Yeah, there definitely won't be quiet, but there's a good chance when this interview ends, I'll be like,
I'll stay for another segment or two.
How are you and the family doing?
We're good. We do have two kids, 4 and 1, and so they're at the age where they sort of need constant attention. Not like a 12-year-old that can read a book or FaceTime a friend or something. So we are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. locked in to parenting mode and all those challenges that every parent is facing right now with how do you feel that day when they can't see friends or family or really go do stuff. But, you know, most importantly, bud, we're safe. And, I don't know how much you and I cut, but there's actually... So I thought I had a scare 2 weeks ago because we thought Fred Hoiberg had it. And I interviewed him twice at the Big Ten tournament on Wednesday, the only day the event happened until it was canceled. And he left his game with 4 minutes left because he was so sick.
All right, Mike, your phone's breaking up. So here's what we're going to do because, listen, I say it all the time. We have advanced so far technologically, but we still live in a place where you can't make a phone call. I'm literally doing a radio show from a basement, but we still can't make phone calls. You know why? Because phones are not made to make calls anymore. So we're going to reestablish with Mike because I want to hear that story and I want to find out what he's watching. Like, that was the whole point.
Think
and
about this, good. Lawrence.
Yes.
Like, back in the day, what, in 69, they did filming from the moon. Like, it was pretty clear. And we haven't advanced since then.
Tony Gill doesn't believe that.
Like, I mean, it's weird. It's just very weird that you had crystal clear television. People watched a film from the moon pretty much live, and we can't get cell phones together. So Mike's ready to go again.
All right. So let's go back to you were worried that you might have been exposed to coronavirus.
Right. I don't. Let me be clear. I don't. But there was a scare the Wednesday of the Big Ten tournament, so basically 2 weeks ago. Fred Hoiberg was sick, the head coach of Nebraska, and I did two interviews with him, for a few minutes each, face-to-face, definitely not 6 feet apart, and with 4 minutes left in his game, he had to leave because he was so sick, and he actually went to the hospital, and so until about 1:30 in the morning, we were like, oh my gosh, and I was on the phone with doctors that Fox, our parent company, set up for me to talk with, and it wasn't until like 1:30 when we found out it was just the flu that he had in the hospital released him that we were like, whew. But yeah, that was a scary thing. So thankfully, and my point in saying that was only most importantly, I'm healthy, my family's healthy, and that's what's most important.
Yes, that is most important because you got two little babies, like beautiful babies at home, and you got to make sure you take good care of them. So I got to know, for a guy that loves to consume comedy and drama and great television, now that there isn't any sports, you're like, it's the old Twilight Zone episode with Mr. Beamish where he has all the books and he finally has time to read all the books. And then, of course, he breaks his glasses. Spoiler alert. But what is it that you're watching now since there's no sports for us to watch?
So I've consistently been into Better Call Saul on AMC. So I'm along with that. I started a while ago, but I just finished a rewatch binge of The American The Office. Still doing Homeland. And what else? I mean, a lot of my shows are more, weekly or daily things that have kind of gone away right now. And to be honest, the kids have made it a little harder to binge stuff because I've really only got that window of like 7 to 10 a night. But yeah, this is the big change right now. Office, Better Call Saul, and Homeland.
I am very much in love with Kim Wexler on Better Call Saul. And I think that their development of her character over the last two seasons has been unreal.
I know. Jeez, I think we tweeted briefly about this back and forth here, but, like, you know, I get Saul is, like, you know, a clearly flawed guy. He's more flawed than he is good. And so when he does something that's bad, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's just, you know, it doesn't make me feel one way or the other. That's who he is. And when you watch Kim Wexler, this genuinely good-hearted, kind, smart, decent person, make something bad, it is so delightful. It's such a joy. There's something about, you know, the producers of that show, in the same way with Breaking Bad, where they can take someone and you want them to do bad things, even though they're a good person at heart. It's, and she's a great actress. I mean, the way she's handled that role has been a total blast to watch.
Mike Hall joining me here for a couple minutes. If you like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, it's a lighter version of it, but have you checked out the show Good Girls on NBC?
Yes. Yeah, my wife watches it every week. I watched the first, like, season or so and then just drifted away. It's still pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's Christina Hendricks, so you've got her. But I didn't think it would go to some of the dark places that it has gone. So it looks like, even if you see the promos, it's kind of like a cheery show. And when you really get into it, it is a dark, dark place.
And that's Retta, too, from Parks and Rec, right?
Yes, she's phenomenal.
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah, their whole cast is really, really good. And I've really enjoyed kind of growing with the show, because I heard Hendricks on Mark Maron's podcast, mm-hmm. and she was talking about the show, and I was like, I've never seen this show before. So then I went back and watched season one, and I was completely hooked on it. And now they're in season three of it, but it's worth a watch. It's gone to some places.
Have you done Succession? I haven't done that, and, like, three different people in the last week told me I need to do that.
Yeah, Kaplan's a big fan of Succession, which makes me think that I shouldn't watch it. So, like, he's always trying to tell me that I should watch it, but, you know, I haven't really, like, dug into it the way that I'd like to.
Yeah, I haven't done that either, but I've had a few different people tell me that's been a pretty good one. And it was funny, we had a friend, have you done the dark humor angle of this coronavirus? Like, we had a back-to-back days where we watched Outbreak and then Contagion, and then someone was like, I think we're in the Hunger Games, and so now we're, like, on the third movie of that in the last week too.
No, you know what I found myself doing, though? Like, I have noticed that some of the stuff that I was looking forward to watching was a little bit dystopian. Like, I haven't done any of the Epidemic movies, but I finished season four of Mr. Robot, which is dark and dystopian, like super dark and super dystopian. And I've just kind of reconnected with Westworld season two. And it also dark and dystopian. And over the last couple of nights, I've, like, you know what? Maybe you need to take a break from that. And I've been watching old DS9 Star Trek episodes. And that's been a very, very good thing.
Very good. Very good. Have you cracked any books yet? I just opened the Bob Iger book a couple days ago that he wrote a handful of months ago. That's a pretty good entertainment media business type of book.
I haven't, but I got Scoop Jackson's new book, The Game Is Not a Game, is on my list. I will put the Iger book on my list for sure. And I just finished the guys from Over the Cap. Like, I read their book on the NFL and how the collective bargaining agreement works. It is heavy lifting reading, but it's so good, and they did such a great job with this. Mike, I appreciate it as per usual, man. I'm probably going to play a chunk of our House of L conversation at some point, so just want to let you know that.
I love it. You're a good man, buddy. And
I'll do my best. That is Mike Hall. So, all right, Campy. Go nuts on this Tiger King show. What you got?
Well, he's talking to Mike right now, but
oh
yeah, he was talking to me, like texting me on the side, just like eyes and like what the hell. And now he's available. Go ahead, Campy.
All right, so Campy, yeah. So you took the first of all, whose recommendation did you trust into making you watch Tiger King?
I mean, there were a lot of people that have been saying it, but especially talking with Herb about it yesterday, what got me to at least give the first episode a shot was him saying it starts on 11 and only goes up from there.
Wow.
So, and I hadn't even seen the trailer for it. So I watched the trailer, and after seeing that and thinking it only gets crazier from what the trailer is crazy. But then you get into it and you think, like, by the middle of season or by the middle of episode two, and it's a 7-episode thing, and I'm only through 4 of the 7. I'm going to finish that off today. By the middle of episode two, the fact that all these people have a bunch of, you know, wild animals or, you know, just like the big cats out there, that's the normal part of this. That's the one constant in all this. And you're just like, oh, okay, well, they're just, you know, they've got a whole litter of tiger cubs. Yeah, that's not a big deal. Okay, this guy's, you know, he's like wrestling with a lion. Yeah, whatever. Compared to all the other stuff going on. So you just don't expect it to keep going up and hitting another level of crazy, and then it just keeps going.
Herbie, have you added anything to the watch list, or are you still working on the same stuff?
Just the same stuff. I have to still actually see the full version of Chicago by L. I've only seen the snippets they sent me in the press junket, and I know it's on my phone, but I was trying to watch it on my television last night. It's here. There's a WTTW app on my smart TV, but there isn't, so I'm going to watch it on my phone on my way home. I know it's only 2 hours, if uninterrupted, so that's what I'm looking forward to next, because I love what Jeffrey Baer does with the architecture tours and goes into certain neighborhoods, and watching that, he went to a place called Argyle, which I've gone to, the Red Line stop, but I didn't know the history of it until I watched that actual snippet he had, and I was like, man, I didn't know this about our city.
That blew me away. Like, that was one of those things where I was writing it down, and I was like, I am going to, once things hopefully calm down and we can gather again, that is one of the first places that I'm going, because of how beautifully they kind of explain the vibe going on Argyle. I mean, it's a really, I can't recommend it high enough for people. And WTTW.com/L, the letter L, and you can see it. And we had a great conversation with Jeffrey yesterday. You can go back and listen to it on the show podcast. It was so good. He's so great and so gracious with his time. It was really, really dope. The Bears made a move. They added a new player. I'll talk about that next here on The Score. Ooh, we gonna throw some D's on it? Lawrence Holmes here with you for a few more minutes, and then it'll be McNeil and Parkins. Herbie, what are they doing today?
I had the schedule a second. Let me pull it up. Hold on.
All right. Well, the Bears made a little bit of news. They signed Jermaine Ifedi, who is a guard, mostly guard slash tackle. And I guess he's going to come in here and compete for the starting guard job and also act as a guy that can play swing tackle, because they did lose Cornelius Lucas. So it's a one-year deal for Ifedi, and he's one of these guys where it's like there's a lot of upside to him, but there were also a lot of holding calls and missed assignments for him in Seattle.
All right, but I got the Bears, schedule.
Okay, wait, hold on just a second. But the Bears are desperate for help, and I'll explain why in a minute. All right, Herbie, so what are McNeil and Parkins going to do today?
2:30, they're going to hold the Pritzker press conference, the daily press conference. 3 o'clock, Dr. Ron Sitrunberg from Advocate will be on to talk about the diseases in COVID-19. 4 o'clock, as part of their Score stories, B.J. Armstrong.
Oh, nice.
Former Iowa great. I don't know what else he did, but he played at Iowa.
Wow.
4:30, Opie from Opie and Anthony fame will be here to talk about, I guess, let's see. I'm not seeing anything specific about, I think he's talking about April Fool's joke he did one time, and then also bringing some levity to this situation.
Okay.
Do you remember Opie and Anthony?
I do. Yeah, I remember their show.
I think they did Sirius XM, so he'll be on. And I don't see any other guest on this list. So It's going to be an entertaining show. That B.J. Armstrong score stories, man, I know he's got a lot of Jordan stories. Has to.
Yes, yes. And I think that B.J. is probably trying to – it seems to me that he wants to do some work in media. So I'm glad that he's going to be available and that he can, you know, kind of give up some stuff for the guys.
Just
that'll be fun to listen to.
If Johnny Jumpshot didn't hit those shots, that would have been our GM. Probably would have won a couple championships.
I wonder how many people remember that. I mean, I know that we do. Like that was a battle for the key to the kingdom between John Paxson and B.J. Armstrong.
Well, and to B.J.'s credit, it's not like he's ever been bitter about it.
No, he's been very open about his bitterness.
And he's actually done a little bit of media. Like I know he used to have a podcast with Rick Bucher, so he's dipped his toe in the water a little bit. So this should definitely be good.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time like being an agent. So, I mean, beyond his own stories from when he was a player, he'll also have stories from guys that he's worked with or represented too. Is it him and Scotty is he one of the choices on NBA Jam? It's him, Horace,
maybe
and
BJ.
Scotty.
Yeah.
And Kukoc, right?
I don't think Tony was ever on there.
I think he was. I think in the later versions of NBA Jam.
Like Tournament Edition or something?
Yeah. Because the only people who have MJ is Glove. He's the only one who has the one that has MJ on it. All right, so let me get back to the Bears' offensive line. They made commitments to both of their tackles that I wouldn't say prohibit, but it puts you in a bad spot to if you're thinking about replacing those two guys. And they made a deal with Cody White here too. So your center... I have a question mark on that in air quotes. You've also made a commitment to him. So then you have the two guard spots. You have one guard spot that is someone that you drafted very high in James Daniels. And the other guard spot has been Rashad Coward, who is a converted defensive lineman. I think that's the weak link on a line that struggled all the way around. Coward's putting in the work to try to make this conversion, but it's a hard conversion to make. It's going to be difficult, and it's been difficult for him so far. So they've needed to bring guys in. They've absolutely needed to bring guys in for competition, but they made so many commitments at right and left tackle already that you weren't going to really have a chance to replace those guys. This from Pro Football Focus, and some people have very strong feelings about Focus. I use it as a lot of different things. Like it's not the only thing I use, but it's one of the things that I use. In ranking the offensive lines last year, they ranked the Bears 25th, and here's what they said. The Bears took an expected step backwards this season, spearheaded by regression in volatile areas from Mitchell Trubisky. Part of that decline, though, was worse play from the offensive line. When the Bears allow pressure this season, they allowed it fast. Their average time to pressure allowed of 2.37 seconds was 29th in the league, ahead of only the Dolphins, Chargers, and Falcons. A silver lining for the group came from James Daniels after he switched over to left guard. Daniels' 73.9 overall grade at left guard ranked fifth among all qualifiers at the position. So he seemed to be more comfortable back at guard. Mitchell Trubisky was definitely more comfortable with him being at guard and Cody Whitehair being at center. Although there's part of me that feels like Mitch has to take some responsibility in that too. When it comes to the protection, you're asking one of the youngest players at his position in the league to take a leadership role that a fourth-year quarterback should be helping him out, or third-year quarterback should be helping him out in that regard. So we'll see if there's football again, if how this affects things, but they have signed Jermaine Ifedi. That'll do it for this show. Thanks for listening, as per usual. Try to get outside today if you can. Chuck Swirsky is going to be on the show tomorrow. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. We'll have more stuff on this. Maybe we'll get a more in-depth look at Bears offensive line play. Thanks to Herbie and Campy for their hard work. Thanks to Shane Reardon. Thanks to Keith Rosen. Our guy, Mitch Rosen, for making sure that we can do our shows. And don't waste today. Get outside. It will make you feel better. I'll talk to you tomorrow at noon. McNeil and Parkins are coming up next here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.